Good evening and welcome to Dialect. Bristol's independent weekly show brings you an hour of news and comment tonight from our studio at Bristol Trinity Community Arts Centre. I'm Gemma. And this is Rich.
I'm Rich.
We'll be here till about 8 o'clock. This evening, we've got reports on the CND from back in the 1980s. And we've also got official secrets from the marvellous reporter, that is Tony Gosling.
The ABC trial, I think it's known as.
Ah, the famous ABC trial. That's all in store for tonight, after Rich reads the news and weather for Bristol.
There might be a bit of a lack of a weather this week because there won't be any. Anyway, here's the news. The Avon and Somerset police bill for council taxpayer... Oh, no, I didn't want that one. What's happening? The House of Lords is to hear a key test case from the Iraq War. Starting on February the 20th, the Law Lords will begin debating a question of great importance for the future of political activism in the UK and for how the British courts in future deal with international law. Their lordships are asked to decide, is a British court allowed to rule on whether a war started by a UK government is a crime? The hearing brings together the appeals of 19 people who took direct action against the Iraq War, including 14 already convicted Greenpeace defendants. Five independent activists whose trials are still pending are also appealing. The Fairford Five seek to know what arguments they are allowed to use in their defence against charges of conspiracy and criminal damage. In March 2003, Paul Milling and Margaret Jones, Philip Pritchard with Toby Olditch and Josh Richards all tried to prevent or delay the takeoff of American B-52 bombers from Air Force Base in Gloucestershire. These bombers were waiting to launch the attack on Iraq that would begin the Iraq War. In the case of Milling and Jones, the action involved disabling a fleet of bomb carriers and other support vehicles used to supply the B-52 bombers. All five say they were justified in their actions because they aimed at preventing the commission of a far greater crime, that of aggression, of starting an unprovoked war against another country. Lower courts have so far denied them this defence argument, saying that the alleged crime of attacking another country is a matter for international law, which cannot be ruled on in a British court. In earlier pre-trial hearings, the Fairford Five have been told they may say in their defence that they feared individual war crimes would be committed in Iraq, but not that the Iraq war itself was a war crime. They'll stand trial at Bristol Crown Court later this year. The week-long hearing before Law Lords is expected to take place before a panel comprising of Lord Hoffman, Lord Roger, Lord Carswell, Lord Mance and Lord Bingham of Cornhill. I think at least two of those are reasonable. Anyway, a Bristol woman whose face was used in an art project at the centre of the £500 million Broadmead revamp is planning to boycott the shopping area because of its new name, Merchant's Quarter. Lisa McLeod of St Werburgh's featured in an art installation projected on the side of Tollgate House, but she fiercely opposes the new name, believing it has links with the slave trade. Miss McLeod's face was projected onto the Newfoundland Way building as part of an artist Jem Noble's I Dream a Tower project. The 18-storey skyscraper is covered in white canvas in preparation for its demolition, and it formed the backdrop for a series of artworks that were beamed onto its sides. Miss McLeod said, "It is exciting as an art project, but I don't agree with the naming of Merchant's Quarter. I'm surprised and disappointed that the name has come up. Next year, events around the city will mark the abolition of slave trade, and one of the reasons Bristol did not get a city of culture status was the belief that it had not really dealt with the issue yet." Supermarket giant Tesco has withdrawn a second planning application to make its Golden Hill store in Henley's larger, but it is expected to resubmit the plans after they have been revised. The chain submitted the plans last year, similar to those put to the council nearly 4 years ago, but has now withdrawn them after a query from planning officers. The plans would see the store increase in size from 16,000 square feet to over 20,000 square feet. Tesco's corporate affairs manager, Julian Walker Palin, said, "The City Council's officers have requested further information and thus we have withdrawn the application to address their request. However, we will submit a new similar application in the next few months." The store has a controversial history which started in 1992. Tesco sparked an outcry which saw protesters chaining themselves to trees when it first announced plans to build a store, in Henleys on school playing fields. During the planning process that year, the City Council received thousands of letters of opposition, and campaigners kept an 80-day vigil at the site. People Power almost won the day, but the government allowed the store to be built after Tesco appealed, and it opened in 1993. Then in 2002, a plan was submitted to extend the store, but was later withdrawn. And now for some upcoming events. Tomorrow night, Friday the 17th, is Anti-Valentine's Night at Cabellet by the Queer Mutiny Bristol. And they wish to welcome you to an evening free from boring coupledom and restraining relationship roles. They want to reclaim love and set it free from society's norms and stigma. It will all take place on Friday the 17th of February at Cabellet Social Centre on Robertson Road in Easton. An evening of music, poetry, films, projections and discussions. It's an open mic night, so please come along and perform your songs, poems, rants about love and relationships. I believe that's starting about 7 o'clock. And also, if you've got any individual gloves lying around, you should bring them along. They're having a collection of singleton gloves. On Saturday, for fuck's sake, is a Hunt Saboteur benefit night at from 8 o'clock until 2 a.m. at the Full Moon, Stokescroft, Bristol. £5 to get in. The bands are This System Kills, Spanner, Kiln the Boy, Kalki, they're all punk, it appears, and DJs Chester with Techno, Kimbo with Jungle, Pates, This and That, Keen, Reggae and Dub. And on Saturday or Sunday, oh, here we go. Saturday afternoon is the Bristol and District Cat Club, an all-breed championship cat show. So if you like cats, Sean Phillips, star of stage, film and television, will be making the best in show non-pedigree cat presentation at the Bristol and District Cat Show Club, being held at the Showering Pavilion, Royal Bath and West Showground in Weston in Shepton Mallet. There will be over 450 beautiful cats, and that's including a selection of all the pedigree ones, and it will be open to the general public between 1 and 5. On Sunday is a Green Futures Conference. Bristol Green Party is organising a Green Futures Conference on Sunday, February the 19th, at the Tobacco Factory Theatre, Raleigh Road, Southfield, Bristol. This one-day conference will be discussing ideas for greening the city, looking at a wide range of issues in the lead-up to the local elections this May, including energy use, transport, health, promoting local economies, local food, housing, crime and much more. It'll start at 11 in the morning and finish at 5 in the afternoon. Tickets are £3 or £1 from Circle Books, and you can get them on the same day. On Sunday at evening is the Bristol Indie Media Collective monthly meeting. The group of volunteers who maintain the website will be meeting at the Hillgrove Pub at 8 p.m. That's in Dove Street South, Kingsdown, Bristol, BS2. All are welcome to attend. This is your chance to shape how the site is run, so if you'd like to get involved in the project, then please come along. If you have any questions or can't make it, but you would like to add items to the agenda, then email Bristol Indie Media at imc-bristol@lists.indiemedia.org. That was the news and events for Thursday the 26th. Is it the 26th? 16th of February.
That's right. Now.
A tune.
Now some music.
Or a jingle.
I like a jingle.
Okay.
I like jingles.
Radio Dialect is your local internet radio station. Check our website on radiodialect.net.
Radiodialect.net.
Stalks a creature that eyes what's up above. Hung destroy all life's treasures. Oh, its essence knows nothing of love. Oh,
Demons by Andy Marshall. You can contact him on andymarshall123@yahoo.co.uk. And here's some more. we're not really going to be listening to that anymore. Right, we've got the first of tonight's reports for you. Back in the 1980s, a secret cabinet committee called MISC7 famously spent £12.2 billion on the American Trident missile system, which the British military didn't even control. Well, Trident, we're told, is wearing out, and we're back there again, considering how to replace it. And again, secrecy surrounds the decision, with MPs as much in the dark as you or I about how much of our money the government intends to spend and on what. Margaret Jones is the new chair of Bristol CND, and she spoke to Dialect's Tony Gosling about the situation as she sees it.
CND, nationally and locally, has a new lease of life because of a very threatening situation. As the Trident nuclear system comes to the end of its life, the British and American governments are thinking of replacing it with something far worse. And clearly we have a battle on our hands, but many think it's a winnable battle to prevent nuclear weapons being being replaced in Britain. And so we're all out there now doing street stalls. There are early day motions to be signed. There's a petition going around. There's going to be quite a lot of direct action, including a year-long blockade at Faslane Nuclear Naval Base. There was a blockade of the bomb factory of AWE Aldermaston, 80 miles from here. And that was only 10 days ago. 50 people actually held up the construction work that's going on there to enlarge the facility. And I wouldn't say the days of Greenham Common are back quite yet, but I think we're heading in that direction.
Yeah, but the government will say all they're doing is updating some old technology. They're basically bringing Trident up to date so that it's ready to face the challenges of the 21st century.
Oh, far from it. It's fairly clear from everything that's being written and said outside of government circles, but by those who should know, that what is planned is the development of a new race of tactical weapons that could actually be used on the battlefield. So we have the very frightening scenario of, for the first time since the dropping of a bomb at Hiroshima, the actual use of nuclear bombs against other countries.
Yeah, but Trident was a submarine-based system. It was an intercontinental ballistic missile system, and still is. You know, this isn't like the sort of stuff you're describing, battlefield weapons.
Well, these are warheads that potentially could be delivered either by submarine or by aeroplane. And when they talk about bombs that are, in terms of conventional explosive power, half the power of the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima, that is quite something to contemplate.
Do we really need a nuclear deterrent nowadays? I mean, as someone from CND, you'd probably say no, but I would have thought that it's a club which is very difficult to come out of once you're in.
I can see that argument, but I see a pressing case as well for us to join the 90% of the world's nations that do not have nuclear weapons. I mean, clearly, if New Zealand or Sweden can do without nuclear weapons, we can too. It sends a very strong moral message to the rest of the world, and also a very strong practical message. Clearly, to have nuclear facilities in Britain puts us at greater risk from terrorist attack, does not actually make us or anybody else safer. It just has always seemed to me ironic that the police talk about taking guns out of communities, and if you take guns out of communities, you make the community safer, and yet if you allow nuclear weapons to proliferate in the world, and everybody will now want tactical battlefield weapons, you clearly don't make the world safer, you make it more dangerous.
But what you're trying to do is uninvent a technology. This technology has been invented. You can't uninvent it.
Well, it's not a question of uninventing a technology. It's a question, now this technology is out there, how do you control it? And this is what the non-proliferation treaty, which Britain, by the way, has signed up to, was designed to do, to bring nations together that possess this technology and bring them to some agreement that they wouldn't allow it to be widespread and proliferate. And Britain has actually broken their commitment to that treaty. And it is a very threatening situation.
Now, just a minute. Britain surely hasn't broken the commitment to the treaty, because we already had nuclear weapons when we signed the treaty. The treaty is all about making sure that it really limiting the number of new countries that get nuclear weapons.
Well, it isn't just that, no, because among other clauses in the treaty, there is one that countries are asked to pledge to downscale their nuclear weapons and eventually to abolish them. And Britain actually went in the opposite direction. When Polaris became obsolete, that was the opportunity for Britain to de-link itself from American military policy, which is another aspect. Instead of which, the Thatcher government of the day opted to have an even more destructive weapon, the Trident system. And of course, those missiles are actually hired from the United States, and a lot of people don't realize a Trident could not even be fired, should the British government wish to do so, without the consent of the United States. So apart from being horrendously expensive, extremely dangerous, it also makes us dependent on the military policy of a foreign power, which doesn't seem to me to make Britain safer, far from it.
Now, we've got an international nuclear crisis possibly looming with the situation with Iran. it seems, deciding that they definitely want to pursue nuclear energy, which of course would allow them then to be able to produce nuclear weapons. Surely this is just as much of a problem. You know, the Iranians must be stopped from getting nuclear weapons, just as you would say that the Britons shouldn't have them.
Well, I have a one-word answer to that: hypocrisy. And it is nonsense, in at least in the present situation, to say that Iran could produce nuclear weapons. By the Pentagon's own admission, they are 10 years off, at least, even being able to start preparations for the production of nuclear weapons. And it is just possible that they want to produce nuclear power. I mean, I think the usefulness of that is questionable, but it is just possible that they want to do that because they need to generate more electricity to expand their economy. But for the West, for the United States and Britain, to say we are afraid of other countries having weapons of mass destruction is rank hypocrisy.
Yeah, but it's there in the non-proliferation treaty, the idea being that there are limits on the amount that various countries, the technology that various countries are able to have. And Iran, it seems, insist on ramping up their nuclear technology.
How can we talk about building a race of new power stations because we need nuclear power and nothing else will cut it, and at the same time we denounce another country for having nuclear power stations? Let's at least have a little consistency.
That was the new chair of Bristol CND, Margaret Jones, talking to Dialect's Tony Gosling there about the questions over Iran's nuclear intentions and planned extension of Britain's nuclear deterrent. Now we've got Wilson Pickett in the Midnight Hour.
Sequence nowadays, it's difficult to imagine that Chantham's GCHQ and signals intelligence, that's phone tapping the like, were once top secret themselves and almost unknown to the public. Clive Anderson recently had a look at the 1978 ABC trial, named after the defendants Aubrey, Berry and Campbell trial. Quite soon after the trial began, disturbing facts came to life light about the makeup of the jury, which might make us worried about how juries are put together today. Clive Anderson reflects.
It emerged that the foreman of the jury was a former member of the SAS, which worried the defence, not least because Campbell had been critical of the SAS. However, the judge refused to discharge the jury on that basis. In the ordinary way, this decision was not to be made public, but the journalist, Christopher Hitchens, revealed it on a TV chat show, of all places, as Geoffrey Robertson recalls.
Christopher Hitchens blurted out this fact live on Russell Harty's show. And you can imagine the pandemonium at MI5 and at the Attorney General's office. Mr. Silkin had MI5 raid London weekend television on Monday morning, and the judge harumphed, but he had no alternative but to discharge the jury.
So the trial had to start again, with a new jury and indeed a new judge. The whole process appeared ever more farcical. To keep secret secret, everyone and everything was being referred to by letter and number. Duncan Campbell.
You had the post office tower at number 47 and Heathrow Airport traffic control centre at number 102. And witness after witness would come from these establishments and be asked, is there anything secret about Europlace? Do you put out press releases? And it became a circus act. The judge raised his eyes to heaven and says, when is this stupid prosecution going to stop?
The new judge was Mr. Justice Mars Jones. Although not known for being a soft touch, he clearly took a dim view of the prosecution, at least as far as the most serious charges under Section 1 of the Official Secrets Act were concerned. Geoffrey Robertson.
Halfway through, he called us all in and he said, look, I've gone through all the evidence. These Section 1 charges are absurd. These young journalists weren't intending to prejudice the national interest. These charges are for spies and saboteurs. And John Leonard, who was leading the prosecution, stammered out, yes, my lord, but it's been authorised by the Attorney General. To which Bill Mars Jones said, if the Attorney General can authorise a prosecution, he can jolly well unauthorise it.
The next day, the Attorney General decided to drop the Section 1 charges. But Campbell thinks he shouldn't take all the blame.
I would say that the law officers and the government of the day were gravely misled by the information that was put before them by the security services as to the nature of what they were dealing with.
However, the Solicitor General, Peter Archer, doesn't accept this analysis.
I've no evidence that the intelligence services were pressing Sam to prosecute. What they should have done, and what I think they probably did, was to lay all the facts before him and say, this is the evidence that there has been an offence, and these are the considerations which we have in mind. You must make up your own mind.
Well, you describe a very neutral and calm conversation, but what they would be doing is say, look, we bugged these people, we then arrested them after their meeting. What are you going to do about it now?
Well, I have been a law officer, and people don't come in and thump the table and say, we've got to get these so-and-sos. It's all very calm.
But it was anything but calm at the end of the case. After the Section 1 charges were withdrawn, the defendants declined to change their pleas to guilty on the Section 2 offences of giving and receiving information, despite the judge's encouragement to do so. But they were convicted by the jury, and the journalists, A and C, got conditional discharges, and B, the ex-soldier, got a suspended sentence. The government and Attorney General were widely criticised for having brought the case at all. According to the Daily Telegraph's post-mortem, the case had all the ingredients, including mystery and intrigue, of a major spy trial, but one vital element was missing, the spies. But Michael Coombe still thinks it was right for the prosecution to have gone ahead.
I'm convinced it was correct. If a soldier breaches the Official Secrets Act knowingly and deliberately, and two journalists rely on that in hearing what he has to say, that is a serious matter.
Do you think this trial exposed that over-reliance on secrecy that it could be argued existed at the time?
No.
Well, you're comfortable with the prosecution having been brought and tested?
Certainly.
But what of the longer-term significances of the trial? Certainly we've become a much more open society since the trial took place. Section 2 of the Official Secrets Act was repealed a few years later, and bodies like GCHQ and MI5 now have their own press offices and websites. And of course, we now have a Freedom of Information Act. Geoffrey Robertson has no doubt about the trial's contribution.
The ABC trial helped us to get to that position. It should never be forgotten that were it not for the courage of these three young men, and I think there are individuals in our legal history who've shown courage that has changed us for the better. As a result of this case, our law strikes a more acceptable balance.
One future politician who took a keen interest in the trial was then a young barrister.
Although he was not known as Tony Blair at the time, Mr. Anthony G. Blair wrote a small pamphlet criticising the government and the actions it had taken.
So how profound was the impact of the trial on Blair's attitude to secrecy and intelligence? Campbell has watched his career with interest over the years. A few years later, when Tony Blair was an opposition MP, their paths were to cross again.
I was in receipt of a very attractive series of secret documents that were being leaked from the Bank of England, and he rushed round and lapped them up on our sofa. We therefore engaged with him and fed him information that might assist in questions or embarrassments over stuff that had been exposed for a number of years.
So he's lapping up secrets on your sofa. Do you think he's approaching secrecy and security information in the same free and open spirit now he's in office?
As of this time, I have far more trust and confidence in the people in the security and intelligence services than I would have in Mr. Blair and those around him.
Duncan Campbell there, ending that report by Clive Anderson. Unfortunately, that report is not available on the BBC's Listen Again section, which is why we are rebroadcasting it on dialect this evening.
And now we're going to have a song.
A song!
Why simply get your way without? Or your ashen face? Or your fondness for posterity? Your obvious sincerity? Your lack of animosity? Or your super generosity? Was nasty? Your beautiful smile? Tony Blair, I don't care what you say is true. When you flash a big whippy, razzle-dazzle, kubalini, perfect, you say, I'm done. Oh, Tony, I think I'm falling in love with you. Because your girls with at school have rules, to me you're as butch as butch can be. Who gives a fuck is about WSG?
That was Martian and Stanley Forbes with their Tony Blair song and a little remix of. Coming up next, we have a little snippet of the latest Guns N' Roses tune, which has just come out. Guns N' Roses now comprises Axl Rose and a bunch of other people. But anyway, this is their new tune, and here's a little sample. It's called IRS. Oh, well, it will be called IRS. There we go, that's it. That's the very latest from Guns N' Roses, and if you wanna hear more of that, you're just gonna have to wait until the record comes out and go buy it. Anyway, now we have Jeff Dart with the latest What's On guide coming up this weekend.
Thank you, Richard. Good evening. This is your weekly What's On guide from Radio Dialect. Starting with tomorrow night, and at Riff's Bar, which is at Hook near Swindon, the Cuban Heels will be performing with support from Superhands. The gig should start around 9 p.m, and entry is £3 on the door. On to Saturday night, and at the Reckless Engineer in Bristol, the punk covers band Fat, Drunk and Stupid are performing. The band should be on stage around 9 p.m, and entry is free. Also on Saturday night, and this time at Holy Cross Social Club in Dean Lane, Southfield, Bristol, the alternative rock band Alien Stashton will be performing with support from Figment. Doors open at 8 p.m, and entry is just £2.50. Moving on to Song of the Week, and the honours go to the Somerset-based group Smith and More. This is the track This Is Your Life, which is from the Welcome EP.
This is it. I'm lying on the floor trying to wake up. This is your life. Is this all I get? I'm lying to myself about the state I'm in. No, I'm alright. I know what you're thinking, baby, but please try not to hate me. Take a left, but I should have gone straight ahead. Didn't read the signs. Don't punish me. We all make mistakes, you know that. And you're alright. What's with that face you're giving? If looks can't 'cause I never ever really wanted to say goodbye to a love that made me whole. I just don't know which way to go. Trying to wake up, this is your life. I never ever really wanted to say
Smith and Moore with This Is Your Life. For more information on the group, you can check them out on www.smithandmoore.co.uk. And finally, for Saturday night at the Fleece in Bristol, Larry Miller will be performing. He was once a firm favourite in the old granary, which once ruled the Bristol music scene. Tickets are £7 in advance and doors open at 8 p.m. On to Sunday night, and at the Fleece in Bristol, the Infidels will be performing. Tickets are £7 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. I just got time to tell you about this Monday coming, the 20th of February, at the Carlin Academy in Bristol. The ever popular musician Julian Cope will be performing, with support from local heavy rockers Gonga. Tickets are £16 and doors open at 7 p.m. That's all from me tonight. Have a great weekend. Take care. Good night.
nearly 8 o'clock and we're at the end of this week's show. Dialect is a community access co-op. If you'd like to help out with making our programmes, please get in touch. Have a chat to Volunteering Bristol on Royal Oak Avenue or give them a call on 0117 989 7733. Or you can stay in touch via our website, that's www.radiodialect.net. This week's dialect was brought to you by Jeff Dart, Gavin Thomas, Janet Thomas, Rich Ayres, Chloe Stirk, and me, Gemma Honour. This week's producer was Tony Gosling. So, from us at the dialect team and the Trinity Community Arts Centre in Bristol, hoping you have a very good evening.
Political stand-up comedian Mark Thomas, the man who finds comedy and politics inseparable.
Well, Coca-Cola do have links with the Nazis. There's masses of evidence that links them to financially assisting the regime, to working with the regime.
Joe Wilding, a trainee solicitor from Bristol, took the circus to Iraq.
The Americans fired warning shots our way. That threw the Mujahideen out of the houses. We were in the crossfire. One of the gunmen jumped into the car. From their point of view, there was a carload of foreigners trying to leave Fallujah in the middle of the war. They needed to know who we were. We had been in Fallujah escorting ambulances and trying to move medical supplies around because the US troops in Fallujah were shooting at ambulances. They'd closed down the main hospital. They were not letting medical supplies around parts of the city that they controlled.
Dr. Richard Stallman, founder of the GNU Project and president of the Free Software Foundation.
The UK government seems to be working on an agenda of total surveillance, and we have to oppose that in every way we can.
XMI5 whistleblower David Shaler.
States using violence against terrorist groups usually only leads to an escalation of violence and the deaths of innocent civilians on both sides.
Radio Dialect, bringing you the news.